Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One of my favorite places in the Bay Area, Freedman's
Appliance. You're looking quite fly.
Thank you.
A little bougie, I might say.
Now, did you go back? I got to show you guys something before you leave today. Have you seen the walk-in refrigerator?
I have
not. In the back. It's unbelievable. It's like a walk-in closet. Only better.
So, I didn't even know those existed. A walk-in refrigerator?
I didn't either.
Meal and Bosch,
Signature, Fisher and Paykel. They got all the big boys here.
What'd you find in there?
Everything.
Is it stocked? They got a bunch of white wine and beer in there, or what?
Well, Grandy, that's the beauty of the live working vignette. They're all stocked. They're all working. People are manning the kitchens and laundry rooms. It's always a fun weekend here.
I mean, they rolled out the red carpet. What more
do
you need?
They do it twice a year, fall and spring.
Well, this is the fall clearance sales event, obviously. No, we're just looking at because I wasn't sure since we lived together if we were allowed to get like an in-unit, laundry.
Washer and dryer.
Yeah, washer and
dryer. I don't think we have the hookups.
I don't think we have them either, but I was just looking out there. I was like...
They have really
honestly,
good...
You want to go in on one?
They have really good ones for apartments that are really small and compact.
Yeah, we could put it in Jack's room. We could put it in the master.
And plus, you guys, I know you guys. You guys don't do a lot of laundry anyway, so.
What are you talking about?
It's not like you're going to need a heavy duty machine.
Well, see, this is the thing. As you well know, it's been a while, obviously, since you slummed in a place like ours. But you kind of save up laundry, so you do it maybe once a month. But when you do it, it's just pounds and pounds of laundry. I mean, you really need a good unit.
Yeah, you do. You do. And
they got that
question.
Here. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Ordinary pair of jeans.
Sure.
How many times you wear them before you wash them?
You don't want to know the answer to that question.
Well, if you don't spill anything on it.
About a week.
I'll wear it
week.
I'll wear it five times.
Yeah, exactly.
Not five times in a row. You got to mix it up so people don't think
five and seven would be fine.
You know, people don't think you're classless.
I don't wear it every day, but no number of times that I wear it before I wash it. Yeah, like five times.
Yeah, like this. Gray's worn this shirt three times this week, probably.
The shirt's probably two at the most. For me.
I'm just
for
kidding.
Me. And I'm a little older. I'm a little swarthy. I got to wash after each.
Well,
use
you probably also got a couple nice shirts yesterday for your birthday, right?
It was a little slim pickings. Birkenstocks and a Canada T-shirt. That was it.
Oh, of course. A Team Canada?
Yeah, of course.
Now,
of course.
Is that something that you usually ask for? Or it's just given that any American is going to be burnt?
Yeah, somebody had a nice shirt on, and I was like, that's a cool shirt. And then she got it for me for my birthday.
No,
that's
Tulane.
The way it works.
No Tulane in advance of the big game?
Tulane is powerful, it's swag that I can... It better not be a gift because I've deserved that because I pay the tuition. So Tulane stuff is should never be a gift. That should be what you're able to wear when you send a kid there. See what I'm saying?
We got you.
No, actually, I don't. I don't have a kid at Tulane as far as I know.
Yeah, you're not going to want to either.
They got a big game today, right?
Tulsa.
Right now.
Tulsa. Yeah, we're all right. We'll beat Tulsa.
Wait. All right. There's something I wanted to ask you about. So... I'm kind of keeping track of the show through social media and through, our friends, so to speak, of the program. And I saw something yesterday that, did you say Ricky Pearsall's better than Brandon Ayuk?
I think he's going to be better than
Now, Gonna Be is better than him
Well, he is better than him right now. I mean, there's no doubt
he's
better
than him.
I'm just saying.
He's got cartilage.
As you know, I'm a very literal person. I mean, he's better than Ayuk right now. I think Pearsall's really good. I do. I'm starting to think, do you know he does not have one drop yet in his career?
Really?
Not one.
Even last year?
Do you think Pearsall can be as good as Ayuk was when he was at his best? An all-pro, 1,300 yards.
He might be this
year.
What?
I think it's within the realm of possibility. I think the best news for the Niners, if Ayuk can come back and be himself, although I'm starting to think that might not happen this year, but...
I agree.
If ideally next year, because they say that thing may take 2 years, and ideally if he comes back next year, it's like who cares if he's a one and a half, or a two? It's like if you have Pearsall and Ayuk, that's pretty good, I think. And if Kittle's still playing at a high level, and obviously they'll have to make a decision on Jennings, but they got Watkins, Robinson is under contract. It's funny, their receiver group can go from lean to loaded pretty quickly if they get healthy. But I don't know when Ayuk's going to be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see their full room at full strength the entire season.
Well, so the week that was talked about for Ayuk was week six, right?
Yeah.
So this week, week four, heading into week four, John Lynch said he's not close.
Sounded like more like maybe week 10 or something like that.
But then expecting him to get to 100%
right.
is just, it's going to be tough. I mean, I think that you just project, all right, can we get 100% of Brandon Ayuk with an emerging Pearsall next season? You know, I don't know if it's one's the one, one's the two, but I think you're right. You're looking at a future, hopefully in the near future, where you have co-number ones. And I think that's honestly the kind of strategy that a lot of the best teams have used. You know, you think of Philadelphia. Yes, A.J. Brown is a better receiver than Devontae Smith, but that guy won the Heisman. It's not like he can't go out and have a big game. I mean, even Cincinnati. Yes, there's a hierarchy of Chase is the best receiver being in football, but T. Higgins is a pretty damn good receiver who they just paid big money to. Like, you kind of do need two options on the outside, and the fact that Ricky Pearsall is going to get the opportunity to lead this room at such an early age, it can only help him.
Let me ask you guys this. How similar of receivers are Ayuk and Pearsall?
We were actually just talking about
were
that
really?
Earlier. I think they
look exactly alike.
I kind of think they have a lot of similarities, too, and I wonder if that matters at all.
I mean, I don't know if it matters, but I think it, you know, one thing that Kyle Shanahan, when this offense has been humming throughout his time as a play caller, it's because they're able to do so many different things out of the same look. And I almost feel like it helps someone like Shanahan more to have a receiver, multiple receivers with the same skill set, because it makes their offense chameleon-like. It makes them difficult to adjust to. And the fact that Shanahan is also, of course, one of the best play callers in the land, you give him two guys with the same skill set that are both high-level receivers, I'm pretty excited to see what he could do with that.
I also think, Steiny, that those two guys, we were talking about this earlier as well, Pearsall and Ayuk, also fit with the quarterback that Purdy is and what Mack is.
Yeah.
You just give them a yard of space, and they'll time it up, and they'll put it on him. You don't need to run past a dude and give him 5 yards of space 30 yards down the field. But you just give him a small window within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage, and those guys are great at getting them the ball there.
Yeah, I do feel like if they may be similar, but they each have a few attributes that they can do. So, like, for example, if they're both really good route runners, and maybe not one's a burner, well, you can send one out, you know, 10, 15 yards, and the other out 20 to 25 yards, and it can be either one because they both do that well. But it does look like both these guys are going to be good route runners. They have good hands. I feel like they're pretty smart. And, you know, they're not Jamar Chase, but they're that next level down. And if you have two of them, and I get it, Pearsall, I'm being a little hyperbolic, but
see if you can stay healthy.
Yeah, that's the other thing,
that's
too.
The biggest
I mean, that is the other
them.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, can they stay on the field? And it feels like it's a question you have to ask about every San Francisco 49er at this point. Can you stay on the field? You know, I don't know. Like, it's kind of chicken or the egg, but I'll throw it at you guys. I think one of the reasons why they are so good is because of the callus that they build. And I think how hard they practice is one of the reasons why they're also built to play in the postseason. A lot of Shanahan teams are typically physical, smash-mouth teams, and they win whenever they get to the playoffs. Like, they just do. When they get to the postseason, they get to the NFC Championship game. And I don't think it's a coincidence that their brand of football is more suited for late. Maybe it's cold weather. Well, maybe not Purdy. He's had some trouble in rain and snow. But you know what I'm saying? Like, those football teams that Shanahan has coached here are typically teams that are going to perform well late in the season and also trend up. So while I know that they've been hurt a lot and it's been catastrophic at some points, especially last year, I think that's also a reason why they're so good late in the year.
Well, and really quick, Steiny, the only injury that is season-ending is Bosa. Everyone else you expect is going to be back soon or within, I don't know, 6 weeks from now. So maybe they're fully healthy minus Bosa come the playoffs.
I'm starting to come to the conclusion that, yes, there's something about the way Shanahan coaches that's a part of the injury thing, not the whole injury thing, but it's a part of it. But I just think that's like part of what comes with the territory. He has to, in his mind, establish a level of physicality and intimidation and effort, and they're going to do it. And it's going to pay off, but there's going to be casualties probably on the way there. But I do kind of think that this may be just, you know, part of who they are and what they're going to have to overcome if this is who Shanahan is as a coach.
Well, how do you, like, toe the line between, like, we use the McCaffrey touches as an example. He's healthy. He's ready to go. This is when you use him, and you've had three close games. If you don't use him as much as you did, do you lose any of these games? Probably. But is he healthier to help you come week 12? Does that matter if it costs you a win now? Shanahan's trying to find, like, the line where it's not malpractice, the number of touches you're giving him, but he's your most important player on offense. You got to take advantage when he's there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the other thing I think Shanahan maybe makes a differentiation about is if anybody's playing for him on a given Sunday, he does not make any sacrifice or allowance for if they're not 100%. He'd rather have them not play. I think every 49er player kind of knows that if they step on the field, you know, they're not just out there as window dressing, that he may use them in any way he can to win a game, even if it's, you know, giving him the ball a ton of time. And then we'll get through that game and we'll see where we are the next game.
Make sure to come into Friedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today and tomorrow, their fall clearance sales event. Take advantage of factory direct prices, one-of-a-kind opportunities, special pricing on floor models and convenient financing. Save on new appliances from trusted brands like Miele, Bosch, apparently has walk-in refrigerators, Electrolux, LG, and Maytag. So visit Friedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill for their fall clearance sales event today and tomorrow for the best time to save on new appliances for your home. Evan Giddings, Mark Rainey, Matt Steinmetz. What are you looking forward to on Monday, Steiny?
Media what am day. I looking forward to on Monday?
Man, you guys had a great conversation yesterday about what would lead, right? What would you guys talk about on Monday?
What would the lead be?
Well, it depends on what happens. I think if Melvin doesn't get fired.
We know what Bob Myers thinks.
Yes. If Bob Melvin doesn't get fired, the Giants are out of the discussion.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
And even if he is.
If he does get fired, then he gets to just go on the board and we'll figure it out. We'll push him aside.
Then it depends if anything happens with Kuminga or not.
The problem with Kuminga is going to be is if he signs the qualifying offer, we're going to talk about it, but it's going to be hard to talk about what to make of it other than it's not good.
Do you think he's there?
He's...
Like, last year Kuminga was at Media Day, but I don't know if he talked.
Well, that's the whole other thing with the timing of this. If Wednesday's the deadline and it goes through Wednesday, then he can't be at Media Day because he's not under contract, and neither can Horford and Melton if they're on the team. And they won't be able to practice Tuesday. Not that that's a huge deal because they're veteran guys, but that's what also makes the timing of this kind of weird. And the other thing I saw is both sides could agree to push the deadline back, but I have no clue why they would, because it's just going to push practice with the whole team back another couple days.
I think both sides, even if Kuminga's sides ends up losing it in their eyes, I think they want the deadline just to get something done.
I would think so. Yeah. I would think so. As for the Niners, I mean, if they win and they're 4-0, and then the part of the Niners that's got to be talked about too is that they're going to be playing the Rams then.
Yeah, Thursday.
Right after. So we're gonna spend Sunday talking about the Jaguars game, and right away we're gonna start talking about the Rams, and you know, that could be a 4-0 team against the 3-1 team. So I still think it's gonna be the Niners.
Really?
On Sunday.
So you don't think we're gonna get major Warriors development this weekend?
Well, I didn't say that. I just said that.
Who you been talking to, Steiny?
You would put Kuminga ahead of the Warriors, ahead of the 49ers.
If something happens with Kuminga,
really?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's a chance that maybe there's no Kuminga resolution yet, but the Warriors say, screw it, we're signing Horford, Melton, Seth Curry, GP2. Like, I would not be, or at least one or two of them.
Well, that's
guys.
The other thing. If he signs, then we probably will. Okay, now the Warriors have Kuminga, Melton, Horford. They'll be more than just Kuminga at
but
that
the Warriors
point.
Could also do, all right, Al, here's the mid-level exception. By the way, JK, this now means we can't offer you that contract anymore. You better sign this now, otherwise it's off the table. I don't know.
I think the issue for me with the Kuminga saga is it feels like we have every piece of information along the way. And so unless something happens that it doesn't feel like we already know, I don't know if it's going to be a major development. Like, if he signs the qualifying offer, we understand the ramifications of that.
We've already talked it out.
Exactly. If he signs the 3 for $75, okay, well, we kind of know what the intention of that is. It's just he got a better offer from the Warriors and he made himself more money. I think the only way that we lead, it could be just me, but like if they trade him this weekend. I mean, and then in that case, which I also don't think is going to happen, but if it did, that to me is something that while we've discussed, okay, there's possible machinations and trades and whatnot, like, but that's more of an unlikely. So it's got to be something from left field for me.
I get that. And now I'm starting to think about what Grandy said. If he takes that qualifying offer, and we know that on Monday at 10 o'clock, that is going to be big because that's bad. I mean, it's just bad all the way around. And I do think from like a sports media standpoint, we will have talked about him possibly signing that for 3 or 4 months. And it was always followed by, there's no way he's going to do that. There's no way. But then if it happens, then we got to start talking about, okay, he's got a no trade clause. He's going to be at camp. His agent already said he's not going to be happy.
And on a one-year deal, do you have any interest in really trying or pushing yourself physically? Why would you?
I don't know.
I think it also it signals that the second timeline is over. Like, because you're going to lose him for nothing.
Right.
And it means that he's the last possible piece.
Moody and Pajemski.
Well, he's the last asset that you could use to get something or turn into something from your top two picks. You whiffed on Wiseman, and if he leaves for nothing, it means you officially whiffed on Kuminga. How we doing? So that to me is kind of my broader like look at things, is that your plan to set up whatever was going to happen after, you know, the Curry Drake, like, that's done. Sorry, you failed.
Yeah, I'm starting to maybe rethink this whole thing. Good thing we don't have to make a decision until Monday. Because if Purdy plays and the Niners win 27-13, okay. They should have won that game.
Another
and they
game
did.
Going up
and
Thursday. We'll talk
Purdy
about you on
had a
Friday.
Scared
passes.
Of Jacksonville? Duval County?
Who was I talking
coming
to?
Coming to Santa Clara?
Who was I talking to saying, Jacksonville's
Boy.
Not bad?
That was me at the bar yesterday.
Yeah, that may have been. That may have been.
Steiny. Bob Myers called in for your birthday. Like
he does it every year.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And what he said about Kuminga, though, I found super interesting. I don't know if you caught it when I think you asked him what should lead Monday, right?
Yeah.
And he was like, I mean, frankly, guys, I'm amazed by all the attention Kuminga's getting. You have to explain that to me. I mean, the way I took it was Bob and a lot of people around the NBA feeling like, he's not worth all this trouble? Or was that just me interpreting Bob the wrong way?
No, I think that's a fair way to interpret it.
That's what I heard,
too. Like, every time we talk about it, we spend a lot of time on it. Sometimes I do think, I mean, we're talking about a sixth man.
Yeah, at best.
Which sounds probably like an insult to Kuminga, in fairness to him. But he's come off the bench. I think, Bob, it's just that I think the discrepancy of opinion about Kuminga is so wide that that's what makes it more of a hot topic. There are a lot of people that think he can be a superstar. And I think there are a lot of people that now, after watching him for 4 years, saying, I just don't get it. And we can't cater to this guy because he's not a great fit. And, you know, he's still got he's got a lot of growth yet to undergo. And it's always been the timeline doesn't work great with this team.
And
with Curry and the stars and Kuminga and the young guys.
It's also the difference of opinion inside and outside the organization. Like, you heard Bob Myers talk about why is this getting so much attention, yada, yada. He's the guy that drafted him.
Yeah, he said that.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, that's a pretty glaring thing to say about someone as someone who, you know, was paid to make that choice. So it feels like it's not just, all right, the NBA community has varying opinions on Kuminga. It's people inside the Warriors don't know what to make of him.
I also think what happens with players a lot in the NBA is they get talked about so much, and then you start talking about them as, you know what, they're not really that good. And then you keep talking about them like they're really not that good. And then you have to look at it from the other perspective where it's like there's not, and this is the way I think of Sabonis. I don't like Sabonis, the guy for the Kings.
Yeah, we know.
But at some point, you badmouth him so much and you think he's so not good that you realize, wait a minute, he is a good player. And if you put him somewhere, like that's kind of where I think teams are with Kuminga. It's like they might not think he's a superstar, but they're wondering, wait a minute, what's going, like he can't be that. Like, he's not a terrible player. We've seen him 4 years. He's got a lot of talent. It's all it's going to take is, you know, it could take one other team to just see it from that point of view.
He's not DNP worthy.
Right. Like, look at him from the other point of view that he's a what's it called? Like a compressed asset that once he leaves, he's going to be better than he was when he was here.
Kind of like the opposite of the running commentary on Draymond is always he's more valuable to the Warriors than he would be anywhere else. Kind of the opposite of that.
Kind of. More important, we got to beat Penn State today.
We?
Yes.
No.
We. Any team
you're
that
not,
plays Penn
you know
State
what? You're
is
not
a we for me.
We are going to beat Penn State.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
all right.
Randy, you want to tell him, so you don't want to tell him your nervousness level on a 1 to 10 scale.
This is probably, I bet it's a lot.
It's Oregon at Penn State.
Right now?
Yes.
Right now it's a 1, but the time by it kicks off, it's a 17. It's
I walk in today, I say, how you feeling? He goes, well, I'm not very nervous. So I ask him, where are you watching the game? Because I'm going to go out and meet Big Carter, who, by the way, did an awesome job this morning with Sam from 9 to noon. And I go, we're going to watch the game somewhere. You want to come? And he goes, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no.
He already told me that yesterday.
This is a solo at home on the couch game.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that means it's
biggest
a big
game
one
of the year.
Yes, biggest game of the year. Until we meet Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. Yeah.
Oh, and you're pretty confident about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're down 3-0 to Washington
right now. They are.
Upset alert. I mean, Steiny.
Tulane score yet?
No one cares.
I'll check for you before you head out.
Oh, this was a game that, what were we talking about yesterday? This is a game that will decide if Tulane is for real or not.
Oh, that's right.
Because if they're for real,
they'll win by three touchdowns.
They will pummel Tulsa.
They will.
But if they're not, And we're going to...
Let me tell you what's going to happen.
You might be checked out for more than 3 weeks.
They're going to pummel Tulsa, but that doesn't mean they're for real.
7-7, 7.5 in the first.
See, we've already given up too many points. Freaking team.
Tulane's... No, Tulsa's punting. You're good, Steiny.
Yeah, right, I think you're fine. Right. You're also good here, too. I know you got a lot of schmoozing and... you know, kissing babies to
go fill her up again, Steiny.
We appreciate you stopping by, Steiny.
All right, gents, have a great one, and go Ducks.
Go Ducks, indeed. We'll see you Monday.
Live here from Friedman's. Big thank you to Matt.
Or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done. Back to 95.7 The Game.
Sorry, it's got the coolest gift I've received in quite some time. Sorry, Mom and Dad, but move over. We're live at Friedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today for the fall clearance sales event. Also happening tomorrow, you got trusted brands like Miele, Bosch, Electrolux, LG, and Maytag. So visit Friedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill for their fall clearance sales event today and tomorrow. We're going to talk to Jim Cozumore about Friedman's Appliance and much more going on at 2 o'clock. Big thank you to Matt Steinmetz, who joined us for the last segment. Yeah, Grandy, so I guess one of our callers, Rich, heard me speaking about Bill King. The great Bill King. Yeah, so he's one of the first voices that I ever heard in radio. And So Rich was kind enough to bring a transcript of Super Bowl 15. When the Oakland Raiders played the Philadelphia Eagles.
That's cool.
And this is a transcript of Bill King's call
game. And
Monty Stickles on KGO. This is so cool, Rich. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Would you like to hop on the headset for a second? Okay, I got you. little stage fright. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this. I'm going to go home and read this as much and often as I can. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so literally from beginning to end. Now,
I don't think
people understand how difficult it is to find broadcasts of old games, because I've looked for Bill King many, many a time, and I have not been able to find audio. But this obviously is an audio, but it is a transcript of that 27-10 Super Bowl 15 victory
That's
for
cool.
the Raiders. So it's pretty dope.
Shout out, Rich. Very thoughtful gift.
Well, I was going to go back to the Warriors, but I'm not sure really where to go now, Granny. So, you know, of the things that we've sort of talked about today, and I'm not sure if you want to continue down the path of Media Day, but I think the question is a fair one, you know, what's going to happen on Monday? And for you, where do you feel like things are at now? And do you think they're going to change as far as what our station will be talking about on Monday come Media Day?
I think that any developments in the Kuminga situation will be topic number one come Monday. I mean, you just think about what the Kuminga situation has been all offseason, and literally nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. The Warriors have made no official signings. The offers to Kuminga have changed. We've seen like 20 different iterations of a potential sign and trade, whether it's with the Kings or the Suns or maybe the Bulls or whatever it is, but nothing official has happened, and it has still eaten up the entire offseason. And you have major talking heads throughout the country, not just here in the Bay, that are updating us every single week on the situation, despite the fact that nothing has changed.
Yeah.
So I find it really hard to believe that the second that something changes, that it's not going to become story number one, because nothing has changed, and it's still kind of been story number one overall over the last 3 months. Now, that means that something would have to change between now and Monday for that to be the way that it goes, of course. I think there's a chance that we see at least the Warriors say, you know what, JK, we're done with this. Al Horford, here's your contract. De'Anthony Melton, here's your contract. And we'll go from there. Maybe that puts a little extra pressure on Kuminga or whatever. The deadline for them is coming up on Wednesday. But I think whenever, doesn't matter what day it happens, whenever it happens, that immediately to me becomes story number one here in the Bay.
I mean, I hear you. I think if the Niners lose, I do think that it changes things a little bit. Because if they do lose and Brock is back, I think there's going to be some discussion about how healthy was he, should you have stayed with Mac. you know, is this season looking a little fool's goldish now after the first three wins where you started to realize, oh my gosh, we won three games by 10 points. I do think that if the Niners lose to Jacksonville, they'll be the top story. But you're right that any form of conclusion to this Kuminga story is going to be noteworthy. I guess I just don't believe it's going to end on by Monday. I don't think something's going to happen one way or another before media day, because I think this thing is going to drag out until the last possible second, which would be Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I also think, like, in terms of things that could happen on the 49ers that maybe would, like, jump them to the forefront, I just want everybody to be prepared for the discourse on Brock Purdy.
No. Oh.
I'm picking the Niners to win this game. I think it'll be competitive. I want everyone to be prepared for the potential ugly Brock Purdy discourse, because Mac Jones has thrown the ball 80 times in his two starts.
Sure.
And let's just say that the 49ers run the ball a little bit better, and as a result, they don't have to throw as much.
I can't run it any worse.
But maybe they lose this game. But it's not because Brock throws three interceptions and only throws for 113 yards and the Niners lose because Brock Purdy failed offensively. It's, you know, a decent Brock Purdy game. By no means was he the reason that they lost. But you see the run game perform better, thereby limiting Brock Purdy's throwing numbers and his pure passing attempts. I guarantee you there will be those Brock Purdy detractors, not talking necessarily about Niner fans, although I think there is a portion of the Niner fan base that feels like the Mac to Brock conversation is a fair one, but I'm talking about people outside the fan base as well, who may say something along the lines of, wow, well, Shanahan with Mac allowed him to throw 40 times a game. Now Brock comes back. They only throw the ball 24 times. I mean, to me, this is screaming. Shanahan doesn't trust Brock. I'm just telling you to be prepared for that discourse, because if we don't see a crazy passing game from Brock, I guarantee you will hear some of that.
Well, I'm just looking at it right now. Brock Purdy has not been asked many times in his career to throw it more than 30 times. And when they have thrown it 30 or more times, the team has not been very good. So he's thrown it 16 times. So before this year, it was only 15 because he did it week one against Seattle.
Yep.
But 5. They were 5-10 in those 15 games that he threw 30 or more times.
Yeah.
Now, I think that is also a product of the teams that he was on, because if he was throwing it 30-plus times, it probably meant McCaffrey is not having a good game, in which the Niners were not going to be successful because
they just got down big or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember how many games they were down large outside of Baltimore. I guess there's one Cincinnati game and then obviously the Chiefs. But, like, yeah, typically you have to throw it more when you're down.
Yeah.
The Niners did not play from behind, I would say, for 90% of Brock Purdy's first 2.5 years. Or really 1.5 years. Last year they did quite a bit. But I don't know. Like, do you really think that people are going to make a big deal out of that?
Yes.
The fact that Mac Jones is throwing a lot and Brock Purdy's not?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
What are you trying to say about the 49ers fan base?
Well, it's not all just the 49er fan base. It's other people outside of the fan base, and it's talking heads, and it's media members who, for the life of me, I can't fully understand the level of, I don't think hatred's the right word, but, like, lack of belief that Brock is a quality quarterback. Like, Brock Purdy is miles better than Mac Jones. Doesn't mean Mac Jones is a bad backup, but Brock Purdy is way, way, way better than Mac Jones has ever been in the NFL. And I think the reason why the pass attempts for Mac are so high, and maybe while they won't be as high for Brock Purdy, is a direct result of the factors around the quarterbacks and what Brock Purdy, even if he's not throwing, forces defenses into. A part of the reason why Mac has been throwing the ball so much, it's partly because of the wide receiver core that he's throwing to, but I think also some of it is because defenses are saying, okay, Mac, we don't believe in you. We're going to make you beat us through the air. We're not going to let Christian McCaffrey beat us on the ground. When Brock Purdy's in there, I think defenses have to play the Niners a little bit more honest.
I mean, I think Seattle played to stop McCaffrey in that football game. He did not run it very well. But I also think the major difference is Brock Purdy can move. So,
see how the toe is.
Well, yeah, exactly. But he is going to take off a few more times than Mac as opposed to throwing it. So, like, let's look at week one. And again, it's just I think it's really hard to take a look at years past and say, well, Purdy didn't throw a lot, especially when they were good, because, again, like, they were always on script. And when Shanahan is on script, I don't think Shanahan wants to throw the ball 35 or 40 times in a football game. I just don't think he does. He would rather run it 35 or 40 times.
Yes.
100%. So, if we're looking at this year, Brock Purdy threw it 35 times against Seattle, and he ran it 6. So, if you convert those 6 rushing attempts into passes, because Mac Jones cannot run, maybe it was 5, but sorry, the point is, let me see here. Looking at the wrong Seattle game.
Oh, right here. This one.
Yeah, so he ran it 5. He ran it 5 times. So if you convert those 5 attempts into passes, which would be for Mac Jones because he's not going to run, that's 40 passing attempts, which is the exact same amount that Mac Jones has averaged through 2 games. Like, I just think it's that simple, that this is a completely different team. And I do think tomorrow, because of their lack of the ability to run the ball, I would not be shocked to see Brock Purdy throw it 35 to 40 times again, because I think they're going to have to win the game.
And they might have more success at it tomorrow because you get DeMarcus Robinson back. There's a chance that we get Juwan Jennings back. The Niners do. We'll see. He's questionable. Seems like Ricky Pearsall is going to be good to go, although that's not official and 100% either. But I also do think there is – and you're right about week one. I would also say the Seattle defense better than the Jacksonville defense. Mike McDonald, head coach of Seattle, defensive guy, was previously the defensive coordinator of the Ravens, now second year in Seattle. He's one of the best younger defensive minds in the NFL and has that defense playing at a really high level. I mean, what they did to Kyler Murray through 3-plus quarters, really 3.5 quarters, was amazing. They got some help from Marvin Harrison Jr., who dropped a couple of passes again. He got himself back into it a bit in that fourth quarter with a big touchdown catch and a couple of other bigger catches. But Seattle's defense is legitimately a top-10 unit in the NFL, in my mind. Jacksonville's no slouch defensively. Josh Hines-Allen is really good as kind of the main guy that makes that defense go. They have Eric Armstead, former Niner, who's on that defense as well, trying to plug up the run game. So not to say that Jacksonville is bad defensively. They're not as good as Arizona. And all I will say is Ricky Pearsall.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Saul is healthy, assuming that he plays. DeMarcus Robinson is good to go, and Christian McCaffrey is healthy. I do think there is a little bit more in front of Jacksonville telling them we got to play this a little bit more honestly than maybe Seattle had to. And Seattle also has the ability, because they're just a better unit defensively and have better players who can say, you know what, maybe we're going to stack the box and dare Brock Purdy to beat us. But they've also got some pretty good defensive backs back there who can hold their own even if they don't have as many bodies back there covering defensively as maybe Jacksonville would. So we'll see how it all plays out. You are right that week one was a very pass-heavy attack as well. I think Kittle going out also impacted that. Niners now have time to plan for life without George Kittle. I'll be interested to see, though. I'm just saying, if for whatever reason we see 25 pass attempts for Brock, whether it's because the run game worked or not, the default answer is going to be, well, That's because Brock isn't as trustworthy to Kyle as Mac might be.
Oh, baby.
Sonny's got filled up again. He's got a Stein going around.
We're loving Friedman's Appliance here. We are absolutely loving it. I really got to go check out this walk-in fridge. You know, it's kind of like... it's kind of like the Niners offense in 2023. You know, you think it's going to be a run, and then it's a pass. And when you think it's a pass, it's going to be a run. I think the Niners, and a lot of it is having Kittle out, is like this year they just kind of have to tip their hand a lot more.
How much of the Kittle injury do you think is the reason why the run game has struggled? Like how important do you think he is to the run game?
You don't want my answer to that. I think it's important, but I don't think it's like... You still have Trent Williams you can run behind.
Why wouldn't I want your answer to that?
Because I feel like I'm on a freaking island. What? Shout out Gilligan.
You don't think Kittle impacts
the
run game?
I think McCaffrey's lost a step and that everybody else is trying to make excuses for him. We're going to put the rat on the table. Tilsner, please. Yeah, rat on the table brought to you by Adco Pest Control. I don't think it's a knock either. Like, he's 29, and I think he's still a really good football player. I just think we will never see 2023 McCaffrey again.
Well, okay, that's one thing, but that's also like one of the best seasons a running back has ever had.
Yeah, but that's all I'm saying, though, and it's like people are just afraid to say that he's a step slower, like, that he's a little worse.
You could be five clicks below what McCaffrey was 2 years ago and still be a really, really good running back.
No, I agree with that, and I think this year he could still eclipse 1,000 yards. I think he could still have
a 1,000.
He has before. I don't think he did with the Niners, though.
Probably. If he's healthy, he's going to do it this year.
1,000?
Yeah. You consider what he's doing through the air right now. He's top 15 in receiving yards.
Yeah, but that's also assuming he's going to play 17 games. That's just me. I also don't think he's on pace for 1,000 rushing yards.
I'm gonna do the math
okay.
for you.
Yes. Actually, look, how about we make a bet on that? If he's going to go for that, that's awesome. I do not think he's going to come close to 2,000 scrimmage yards, personally. But that doesn't mean that he's not still damn good and he's not one of the best running backs in football. I just think the days of him being the best running back is over. And I just don't know why people are so afraid to say that. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. He's older, he's still impactful, but this idea to me that coming into the season, well, the offense was going to be determined on how good McCaffrey could be. McCaffrey's got to be back to 2023. Like, I'm operating under the premise that those days are done.
Christian McCaffrey, through three games, is on pace for 997 rushing yards.
So that's
through
not
17
1,000.
Games. And 1,207 receiving yards.
It's pretty good.
Again, that's if he plays the full 17 games. I would, and that's a big if, obviously. I would venture.
Thank you.
I would venture that
I think that that's actually a problem, to be honest.
You would believe that he's probably going to average more than 58.7 rushing yards per game the rest of the year. Like, this has been subpar on the ground for McCaffrey.
I also don't think he's going to have, let's see, on pace for 110 receptions.
He's got
25 right now through three games. So
I can't do that math in my head.
Well, if you could just, like, you multiply it by, six?
He's on pace for 141. Is that math right?
141 catches? Three games. Times five.
17. Yeah, 141 catches.
Yeah, I don't believe he'll catch 140 balls.
Probably
this year.
Not. But you convert those receptions into rushes, and you would believe that, I would venture to guess, if he's somewhat healthy, even if he plays 14 or 15 games, he will be a 1,000-yard rusher, in my opinion.
Fair, but again, like the year that he led the league in rushing, I think he was closer to 1,500.
Yeah.
He also, you know, I don't know. I think that he has slowed down. That's all I'm trying to say. And I feel like people are afraid to say it because they've won three games. That's the reason why. He's better as a receiver as he is as a running back. That to me is a signal that he's slowing down.
I think there's a lot of factors that go into that, and a handful of them are out of his control. I also think, you know, your opinion is a totally fair one, but I think most people hear that and think, oh my God, he's washed. But
not what I'm saying.
I know that's not what you're saying. There are people who hear what you say and think, oh my God, he's washed. How is the offense going to work if he can't be 2023 McCaffrey again? He's still an amazing football player. I think you can still be one of the best, if not the best, running back in the NFL, even if he's not up to his standards at 2023. And I don't know how you could be, given what he's gone through. But it doesn't mean that he suddenly isn't going to be a focal point and still can't be the driving force behind your offense, because I still think he's both those things.
I actually think that one of the reasons they've used him more as a receiver is to preserve him. Like, not all touches are created equal. And I think a lot of the damage that gets done is typically when he's running between the tackles.
Yeah.
And so they've used him less as a just a traditional downhill back the way that they used him in 2023. And though he's still touching the ball quite a bit, a lot of it is in positions where he doesn't have to take massive hits or he's not being gang tackled. And I think that, honestly, using him as a receiver is going to help keep him upright as opposed to, well, let's run McCaffrey. Like, I would rather McCaffrey catch 10 balls then run it 20 times. Because I think he's going to take less damage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's a difference in 10 touches, too.
Yeah, but I think he's clearly more effective with his 10 touches through the air than 20 on the ground.
You would say 10 carries, 10 catches is less physically demanding than 20 carries.
Yes.
Both are 20 touches. But half catches, half rushes, less physically demanding than 20 carries.
Yes. Yes. I just think that the way that they're using him right now, to me, is smart. I think it's intelligent, and it's impactful, because it's helping to preserve him, keep him on the field. Why, I think also, to me, and it could be because of the offensive line, you could say because of Kittle, you could say whatever reason, they're utilizing his most impactful skill set right now, which is as a pass catcher.
You want to know what's crazy? Is do you know the number of catches that Christian McCaffrey had in 2023 when he was the MVP finalist and like the best offensive player in the NFL?
85.
He had 67 catches in 2023.
Wow.
67 in 16 games played. He's already more than a third of the way there in three games.
I'm just saying, man, like, I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't.
Oh, man.
Because if he was if he was gashing people, what, he averaged like 5.2 yards a carry that year?
As yards running back? Per 5.4.
5.4. Okay, yeah. If he was averaging 5.4 yards per carry this season, he would not be getting the ball out of the backfield. He just wouldn't.
As often. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't be on pace for 140 catches. That's freaking ridiculous.
Obviously, he's not going to stay at that pace. I'm surprised he did not have more catches than that in 2023.
Because he was a running back in 2023.
You're right.
In 2025, he's a wide receiver.
He's always been dual threat. You mentioned, I mean, we brought up the 1,000 receiving, 1,000 rushing yard season he had in 2019 with the Panthers. He had 741 receiving yards in 2022, split between six games in Carolina and 11 with the 49ers. Like, he consistently is putting up good amounts of catches and receiving yards. 2023, because he was just so dominant on the ground with 1,400 rushing yards on 5.4 per carry, that kind of changed up the scheme for the 49ers. But yeah, I mean, 25 catches through three games.
When Christian McCaffrey has had more receiving yards, like higher receiving yard seasons, I think, what was the one in 20? Was it 2018?
2019, he had 1,000 for Carolina.
That team stunk. Like, I just think that now that the team this year does not stink, but I am always hesitant when quarterbacks are just willy-nilly dumping it off to their running backs. I think in this case, it's because a lot of their guys are hurt and the 49ers don't have a ton of options. But typically when you see running backs that are past, like, our leading teams in receptions and receiving yards, that's generally not good.
It generally,
like, those teams aren't great.
It generally speaks to lack of other weapons.
Yeah, generally. And the fact that your offense cannot move the ball through the air. Like, because you have to, typically the running back's getting it within, you know, 5 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and there are obviously designed plays that McCaffrey gets, and Shanahan has talked about that. Like, we scheme it up for this play through the air to go to McCaffrey, whether it's in the slot or it's a screen or he's running a quick little, you know, over-crossing route across the middle of the formation. There are times where they scheme it up. But I think this also goes to your point. If a team breaks down or the receiver doesn't win or the quarterback doesn't trust himself to rip it, and those tend to all be characteristics of bad football teams or at least bad offenses, right? If you have a bad quarterback, bad receivers, bad protection on the offensive line that does not allow the play to develop, what is your final solution. You just, all right, dump it off to the running back. And even a bad running back can rack up 80 catches in a year just because they're on a bad offense that has nowhere else to put give the football to.
Yeah, Danny Woodhead on line one. Like, that guy was, that guy yeah. played for a ton of bad football teams, sometimes during, but mostly after he played for New England. And that guy was just a third down pass-catching back. But I believe there was one year where he led the Chargers in receiving, and that team stunk.
And like, no one cares about our fantasy football teams, but like those kinds of receiver or running
people
backs
love them in fantasy.
Become fantasy gods because they're just not very good football players, generally speaking, but they can dominate the fantasy game, and that's where McCaffrey is a great player, and the way that the Niners are currently giving him the ball makes him one of the most valuable assets in fantasy football.
I was going to say, I think our own Carter Chickering, who again was on this morning with Sam Lubman, did a great job. I believe he was hesitant on McCaffrey because he wasn't sure how much we were talking about he was going to be used as a pass catcher.
Yes, but
and he's getting 15 targets a game.
25 catches, 32 targets through three games. It's absurd.
And honestly, it is impressive considering his age, and honestly impressive considering the Niners are 3-0. Okay, hey, we're going back to Laughing Monk Brewing in Sunnyvale tomorrow for the kickoff show. We got great food, drinks, games in the parking lot, and also a free shuttle back and forth to the stadium. The show begins at 10 o'clock with myself along with Lorenzo Neal, and all the early games are on for you to watch. We had a bunch of people come by last week, go and grab a beer, hang out outside, play games, watch football, and then, of course, they took a shuttle from Laughing Monk Brewing to the stadium and back. The difference this week, it's free, but the first one has already filled out. Bus number two is filling up fast, so you got to go right now to 957thegame.com, click on the kickoff show graphic, and click on the Eventbrite link to sign up. Space is limited. Again, we start at 10 o'clock. Myself, Lorenzo Neal, got you for the kickoff show at Laughing Monk Brewing tomorrow in Sunnyvale. Coming up next, Jim Cozumel is going to join us to talk about Freedman's Appliances and, of course, all the great things happening in various sports. Curious to get Koza's opinion on the 49ers start, maybe what's happening with the Giants, and of course the Golden State Warriors as well. So he's going to join us live here at Freedman's Appliance today, tomorrow, their fall clearance sales events. Again, Miele, Bosch, Electrolux, LG, Maytag, a ton of great trusted brands. So make sure to come on down today and tomorrow for that. Evan Giddings, Mark Ranney, we'll be back with Jim Cozumel after.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.